What I want to do is talk about the background, provide a setting for the Brazier-Sekulow variational principle that Professor Gossow was talking about on Wednesday. Material I want to talk about is material that I did in the period about 1990, 1997, and it hasn't been taken up in the analysis community, but it has been taken up in the mathematical programming community and for numerical analysis purposes. The method, the question is, how do you generate variational principles for various problems that aren't of the typical potential type that for which the calculus of variations is used? And the methods I'm going to describe about are all based on Young's inequality and methods from convex analysis. So that's the background to this. And what I'll do is describe very briefly the abstract theory, which, as Professor Gossow said, is very simple. It's very simple ideas, very simple approach, and it's got a lot of very interesting consequences in specific examples. I mean, everything in the calculus of variations, I think, is pretty simple and abstractly, and the interest is in the examples. So I'll cover three different examples of this, which should be of interest here. So the setting, always have X as a real reflexive finite space. Phi is just a weakly Lower semi-continuous functional. Most of the time later it'll be convex, but at the beginning, but it need not be. And F is just a mapping from X to its dual space, X star, which is continuous. And the question is, how do you characterize or find solutions of a differential inclusion of the form F of X is in the subgradient of V of X? Okay, so the subgradient here is a set of, or the subdifferential of V of X. Subdifferential is a set of all subgradients, and if phi is differentiable, this is just the ordinary derivative. Okay, so that's the problem. I'm going to write down, as I said later, a few different differential inclusions and show what the corresponding variational principle for them is. And it's all based on the definition of the convex conjugate functional, Legendre transform, phi star, defined like this. With this definition, phi star is automatically weakly Lower semi-continuous and convex because it's a supremum of a family of such functions. Okay, so the basic theorem about this, which we've heard about over and over again, essentially Fenchel's theorem, which I believe was published in one of the earliest issues of the Canadian Math Society Journal, which says that, so this is the Young-Fenchel inequality, with those definitions, phi of x plus phi star of v minus the inner product of x with v, so that's a duality pairing, is greater than or equal to zero for all x and v, and equality holds if and only if v is in the subdifferential of phi of x. Okay, why is this? Well, it just follows from the definition here. If this is a supremum, that means that is greater than or equal to this for all x. So just remove that and put an inequality in there and you get that. And then this supremum is attained if and only if v is in the subdifferential phi of x. So it's just the extremality condition for what's in here. Okay, so if this holds for every v in the dual space, so let me say, so supposing I write f of x for v. So f is any mapping whatsoever. It doesn't even have to be measurable, let alone continuous. You put any function whatsoever, and this is true. And inequality equality holds in this expression if and only if the differential inclusion holds. So if you just turn this around a little bit, let's just define J J to be this functional. Okay, so what does that say? Well, J of X is greater than or equal to 0 for every X, and it's equal to 0 if and only if the differential inequality holds. So, the variational principle for the differential inequality is minimize J on X. And X, the Fenchel theorem says X hat's the solution of the differential inequality if and only if two things happen. One, J minimizes, X hat minimizes J on X, and secondly, the value is zero. So these principles are different to the ordinary potential problems because I'm not doing anything here. I'm not talking about critical points of J. I'm only talking about global minimizers. And then secondly, not only must X hat be a global minimizer, it must have a specific value. And in the original paper, Brazis and Ekelund commented on the fact that for their principle for the heat equation, it was easy to prove this, and they had no direct way of proving this. And their comment, and the reason that motivated Professor Gossip's talk was, how do you prove this for their functional? So the results are that not all critical points of J are solutions of the differential inequality, only the global minimizers. And even if you have a global minimizer, it need not be a solution of differential inequality. Okay, so in some ways, this is a generalization of the fact that if you want to solve f of x equals 0, in the way that most hand calculators do, a thing to try and do, or a way to try and do it, is minimize f of x squared. This is in finite dimensions. Okay? If you can find a minimizer of this, whose value is zero, you've got a solution to the first problem, and otherwise not. Okay, well, as we'll see, though, this actually includes all those familiar energy methods. So that's the whole theory. So let me show you some examples. And I'm going to start off by showing how you can prove the Lax-Milgram theorem using this. Ordinarily, if you want to solve LU equals F, say you've got an elliptic equation, you want to solve LU equals F, you can use variational principles, or there are variational principles if L is self-adjoint. And then you have the energy principle, which says, and you teach this usually in every first-year graduate course in PDEs, minimize this, and you'll get the solution of LU equals F. The minute L is not self-adjoint, there's no variational principle. Now, for numerical analysis, in the case where X is finite-dimensional, they're very good numerical methods if you've got a variational construction. And the fact that if I just make one entry in your matrix non-symmetric, add epsilon someplace, suddenly you can't use conjugate gradient methods, Cholesky decompositions, all the nice things that come from variational principles, and you've got to go and use non-symmetric solvers, and that's a real pain. So let me show you how to get a variational principle for non-symmetric positive definite equations, and then the second part is how to constructively get examples. Okay, so as I said there, the energy principle is to minimize this. U hat is a solution of the linear equation, if and only if it minimizes E. Suppose L is not self-adjoint, then write it as A plus B, where A is the symmetric part of L and B is the skew symmetric part. Okay. Okay, well, so I want to show you a variational principle for the non-symmetric LU equals F problem. Okay, define this shouldn't be L, this should be A. Take A as the symmetric part, the what I wrote down, the assumption. Yeah, here, L, I'm assuming to be coercive, so this is the Lax-Milgram condition. And of course, if I decompose it into symmetric and non-symmetric parts, A will still obey this, and the inner product of B, U with itself is zero. Okay? So phi will be strictly convex and continuous, and the linear equation can be written as F minus BU is in the subdifferential of phi of U. Okay, it's an elementary exercise in convex analysis to show the convex conjugate is this. Okay, so if L is the Laplacian, L inverse is the Green's function, and if I write down the functional J, just substitute in the formula, we get this. This is phi. This is phi star of F minus BU. And this is minus, okay, so the formula always was, is I was writing F of X. We'll write it like this. So that's Young's the functional from Young's inequality, and we have this. Now, BUU is zero, and so we get this functional. And Fenchel's theorem says this functional is always greater than or equal to zero, and it equals zero if and only if U is the solution of that equation. If you look at this, okay, this term minus this term plus this term is the ordinary energy inequality. Basically, the minimum of E of U over there is always minus this. So this term and this term and this term is zero. And if B is zero, in other words, if we've got the symmetric case, these two terms fall out, and this reduces to the energy inequality, the ordinary energy principle. When but this applies to any non-self-adjoint problem, and so there is a variational principle for a linear equation LU equals F whenever coercivity holds, the Lax-Milgram condition holds. But, and this is the bad point, in some ways is it involves the inverse of L. If you're trying to solve an equation LU equals F, and I suppose all of these should have been A's. They're only the symmetric part. However, this problem, this functional, is strictly convex, it is coercive, and there is a unique minimizer. This purely quadratic, so I can differentiate everything. And if you differentiate and substitute back in, you actually find that the minimizer of this does obey J of U hat equals zero. And so the minimizer is actually the solution. So you can get, using direct methods for quadratic problems and this functional, the Lax-Milgrom theorem. And what's more is, of course, that if B is small, I mean, if you've just got, for example, you want to solve minus Laplace and U plus a trend plus an advection term, with some boundary conditions, this is the B, this is skew symmetric in general, or it's got a, might have a symmetric part, I could write down a variational principle involving this. In the infinite dimensional case, again, this is A, if B is a first order term, A inverse is compact. And so this term is convex and weakly continuous because B is continuous, but it's not coercive because it, so you've got a, this functional is a weakly continuous perturbation of the weakly lower semi-continuous functional for the ordinary energy principle. Okay, so, but the other point about this is that for finite dimensional problems, this is a variational principle to which you can apply, for example, conjugate gradient methods. Linear equations, though, are quite special in lots of ways, and this principle, this approach works here, but it actually doesn't generalize very well. And what does generalize is a min-max characterization of the solutions. From the definition of J, it involves the convex conjugate. This convex conjugate is a soup, and so I can write it always as the supremum of a Lagrangian, which is this. So this is phi of x. If I take the soup of this in V, I'm just going to get the, so this, omit that term, soup of this is going to be phi star of f of x, and then there's going to be a minus x f of x, okay? And so what that, the Fenchel theorem says is that x hat is the solution of the differential inclusion if and only if j of x hat equals 0 equals the m soup of this. And if you look at the linear equation model, the Lagrangian is this. This has the advantage that it only involves the differential operator. I don't need the inverse. Okay? And for matrix theory, I don't need the inverse. So what this is saying, and in this case it's true, is that U hat's a solution of the linear equation if and only if U hat's a central point of this Lagrangian. And this Lagrangian doesn't involve A inverse. And so what this means is that if I write down this functional and I've got an equation like this, this is a local functional. It only involves the function and its derivatives. There are no Green's functions and non-local terms. So so that's the result. And let me just say that you can, with this formulation, in terms of saddle, in terms of m soups, like this, the existence of a saddle point can be proved directly using either von Neumann's minimax theorem when the dimension of x is finite, or the standard extension of that to infinite dimensions that you can find, for example, in Ekman Tamam's book. What's interesting is that if you just differentiate this with respect to U and V, the saddle point is the critical point, and the saddle condition is that this is zero and this is zero. Okay, so that's just the derivative of that Lagrangian with respect to U and V. Okay, so there's V's and U's are in different place here. And it's an elementary exercise that you can do in 2 minutes to show that the only possible solution to that are U equals V. Okay, so that's an example of that four differential inclusions, which include any symmetric positive, any non-symmetric positive definite linear equation, there is a variational principle, and what's better is there's a saddle point problem. The Brazier-Ekelin type principle was like this. So this is an evolutionary differential inclusion. And now what you do is you want the functional J that's associated with this for every particular time, you minimize that, the integral of that over 0 to t. And if you look carefully, u dot only comes in two places. It comes in here, and then there's a u dot here. Now this one you can integrate out, and it gives you this. Okay, so these are the inner products between dual Banach spaces. So typically this is an L2 inner product, and you have that formula, and this is just the spatial integral of u of x and t all squared. And in this case, say for the heat equation, so that's just the Laplacian, you take as your domain a natural space for finite energy solutions, u0, and the result is that under, if for all u and k, f of t of u is in there, then this is true, and this is 0 if and only if u is the solution of the original problem. Okay, so that's really the content of the Brazier-Ekelin variational principle. But if you take the phi star here, write it out as a saddle point problem, then under certain conditions on F, which I don't want to describe, there is a saddle point formulation for it. In particular, if F is independent of U, is a saddle point condition. And you can prove the existence of solutions of minimizers to this functional using Kiefern's saddle point theorem. With this formulation, because phi star involves the Green's function, it's actually going to be non-local. If you use the saddle point formulation, the integral in there, in under the 0 t, is actually going to be purely local formulation. And as I said at the beginning, the main application of this has been in mathematical programming. And if you, and so this, David Kindle-Ehrer said earlier that much of this talk was about material that started at the Center for Nonlinear Analysis in Pittsburgh. This is in his prehistory. When he was at Minnesota, he worked on variational inequalities and conditions for this. And one of the things that people in variational inequalities used to say was that there were no variational principles for most of the variational inequalities of interest. And this is an ordinary variational inequality. Let's just do the finite dimensional case. You want to solve this. This can be written like this, where ik is the indicator function of k. And there's this functional down here. And this functional has become called the merit, okay, this is hard to work with. This is also hard to work with. If you want to compute something, and there are lots of reasons for wanting to compute solutions of variational inequalities, what you want to do is minimize this and get it equal to 0. So in the theory of variational inequalities, this is now called a merit function, that you try and get that as close to 0 to get your approximate solution. And for example, last year there was a book by Patrickson on this theory of merit functions for variational inequalities. But I think the interesting point is that using Young's inequality, there are a lot of very different variational formulations, variational problems. And so the conclusion summary is, whether you have a differential inclusion or an evolutionary differential inclusion, there are functions, and the direct functions that include the convex conjugate are straightforward, but the interesting thing is to analyze the associated imp-soup problems. And the imp-soup problems, you use minimax theorems and Kifan's imp-soup theorem, and you can prove directly from the structure of the imp-soup functional that there are solutions. I wrote the evolutionary problem in that. Yeah, and actually the first one, f of u, is in the subdifferential. Yeah, yeah. As I said, this holds no matter. You don't have any assumptions on f whatsoever. Absolutely nothing. Until you try and prove directly that there's an imp soup or a saddle point or whatever. Okay, well, the thing is that, okay, condition number is the maximum eigenvalue of A times A inverse, okay? So, you don't want to do the problem with A and A inverse, so you just want to do it with A in there. But what's good is that if you've got a saddle point problem, basically you can do two-dimensional conjugate gradients instead of the ordinary conjugate gradient that goes to a minimum. So there are actually a special algorithms for linear equations based on this functional and using 2D conjugate gradients instead of 1D conjugate gradients. So there are constructive methods. Nearly all of those saddle point methods of the Bretzi type are, you're using the constraint of the divergence free the saddle is in the solution plus the pressure as a Lagrange multiplier. That's actually a different thing. These are unconstrained problems for the most part. Okay. But right, yeah. The thing is that when you have a Lagrange multiplier in a problem, the Lagrange multiplier just enters linearly. And for the Lagrangian for this, it's quadratic because I've got a quadratic term in U and also minus a quadratic term in V. We don't have those problems. You see, so whereas if you've got a constraint, the maximization is just a linear maximization in V, and so you don't have coercivity. So it's degenerate. This is nicer. Yeah, and so the conditioning is much nicer. Well, augmented is... usually, if you want to do an augmentation, you add a plus here and make it a minimization problem. Whereas for this, if you put in pluses, you don't get solutions. This really is a saddle point problem, but it's a saddle point. Genuine minimum in one variable and genuine maximum in another, and it's quadratic in both. And so its convergence rate depends on the smallest eigenvalues of A.